Good morning, everyone. I am indeed, I feel very lucky to be here. Some people who work with me know I've been sick for 9 days. Turned out I was diagnosed Friday afternoon with walking pneumonia, so I am really lucky to be here, thanks to modern antibiotics. So, two disclaimers. One is that the information contained in this presentation does not reflect the official opinion or views of the U.S. Department of Education or that of my institute, the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research. Presentation has also not yet been cleared for dissemination. So this is really a work in progress. Not as polished as I would like it, but the good news is I have a presentation. It'll get polished afterwards. So that's why I'm so delighted to be here. Okay, without any further ado, trying to do four things very quickly. Trace some of the major developments contributing to heightened interest in health disparities research on disability, both sort of the pros and the cons of these developments. Describe the challenges confronting health disparities and health promotion research in disability. Identify gaps in policy and program initiatives, scientific literature, research funding, and infrastructure affecting disability health disparity research. And then identify potential opportunities in the Patient Protection and Affordability Care Act to elevate disability in the U.S. health disparity agenda. So key events. I started with the passage of the Minority Health and Health Disparities Research and Education Act in 2000. I started there because it established the first center at NIH on minority health and health disparities, which is now called the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities. What I think is so interesting about this legislation is that the original language of the legislation, as you will see under mission, allowed to support and promote biomedical and behavioral research, research training, research capacity, and research information dissemination with the goal of improving the health status of racial and ethnic minorities and other health disparity populations. I could find no official sort of operationalization or definition of that. But I found a definition. It refers to other health disparity populations, refer to population groups who suffer from health disparities when compared to the general population. And the term medically underserved was referenced, but in application, when it's applied only as far as I could see in their research portfolio and in their strategic plan, to education, income, and rural populations. I saw no trace going back to the beginning of utilizing this additional latitude to apply to persons with disabilities and their health disparities. So while this was a very positive development, there's this gap. It did not expand to include people with disabilities in this brand new research center. So, but still a major development. Obviously, a second major development in 2001, President Bush issued the executive order establishing the new Freedom Initiative, which was part of a nationwide effort to remove barriers to community living for people with disabilities. Why I've included this is that it called upon the federal government to assist states and localities to swiftly implement the Olmstead decision, and it did that by creating an interagency collaborative structure on disability issues, housed in HHS, but broadly representative of non-HHS agencies. And it directed all these departments to evaluate the policies, programs, statutes, and regulations of their respective agencies to determine whether any should be revised to improve the availability of community-based services for qualified individuals with disabilities and report back to the president. So this was sort of a major environmental scan, if you will, of what the gaps were. The gap in the New Freedom Initiative, as we all recognized, is there was no health component, there was no research agenda, but nevertheless it created this temporary implementing structure, coordinating structure, I should say, which conducted this massive environmental scan to identify lots of gaps, including gaps related to health disparities. A third example of a major development would be in 2003, the first annual National Healthcare Disparities Report, published by AHRQ. As you know, these are done every year. and it required the National Health Disparities Report to track prevailing disabilities in healthcare delivery as they relate to racial factors and socioeconomic factors in priority populations. The good news here is that we finally got in place an annual document where priority populations included the disabled, as well as individuals with special health care needs. The problem, of course, was that there was no data on disability health disparities were reported for people until recent years, and it's still, the most recent one, the 2010, very, very limited data on disability, limited primarily to language and communication difficulties. I also added the Surgeon General's call to action to improve the health and wellness of persons with disabilities in 2005, because this was a very powerful articulation of a health and wellness agenda for people with disabilities. This was a call to action to encourage healthcare providers to see and treat the whole person and not just the disability, as well as a call to educators. And it had, so it was a very significant call. It was, but there was, of course, no authorizing legislation to fund recommended actions and create implementing mechanisms. So building up to 2008-2009, there were, I think during this critical period, there were some real turning points that we can sort of anchor in this two-year period. One, thanks to NIDER funding and CDC, National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities, some research done by UCP, there was starting to be mounting evidence of the extent of health disparities experienced by individuals with disabilities in access to care, secondary conditions, risk factors, and social determinants of health. Charles Drum in the audience, Jim Rimmer, and others of you really contributed to this literature. So while it wasn't all based on national survey data, some of it was, some was based on state data, we started to have evidence of the extent, the scope, of the health disparities experienced by people with disabilities. Simultaneously, there was a growth in the evidence-based practice movement, borrowing from medicine, and increasing pressure on all of us to create an evidence base for public health and health promotion efforts. So how were we going to do that? So again, with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, I think there were two critical things launched. One was CDC's Community Putting Prevention to Work, which funded all these demonstration programs aimed at health promotion and wellness in the community. It was very positive. The only problem, if many of you are familiar with that, it was a menu-driven approach. You had to select from a menu of evidence-based practices that had already been demonstrated to be effective, and none of those had been tested or evaluated for populations with disabilities. So it was sort of a chicken and an egg problem. We were applicants were limited to that menu of evidence-based practices, and none of them had been evaluated on persons with disabilities. Another important initiative during that period was the funded by ERA money was the AHRQ, Comparative Effectiveness Research Initiative. Okay, that still left us with big challenges and gaps. There were a limited number of empirically supported research studies of what works, for whom and under what conditions to improve health promotion and eliminate health disparities. Unfortunately, we're still there. There was a critical, I view it as a critical disconnect between the magnitude of the health disparities experienced by individuals with disabilities on the one hand and the availability of evidence-based community programs to address these needs. I love this quote, which I've adopted from another source. People with disabilities cannot benefit from health promotion interventions and programs they do not receive. If they are not delivered in the community where people with disabilities live and work, they cannot benefit from them. And we have far too much of that. The result, this critical disconnect is a result, I would argue, of critical gaps in the scientific literature, in policy and program initiatives, in implementing systems and infrastructure to support increased research funding. So let's look at some of these gaps. Gaps in recent policy and programmatic initiatives. The very recent HHS action plan to reduce health disparities is limited to race and ethnic disparities. The subtitle, A Nation Free of Disparities in Health and Healthcare, does not extend to other priority populations, namely disability. So I see this as a major gap, although it's a very powerful document. Also, the reauthorization of the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities under the Affordable Care Act continues to limit its agenda primarily to race and ethnic minorities, although the original act allowed for other health disparity populations. Now I want to show some gaps in research, current research funding. And so what I did first was did some Google searches of Google Scholar. Wanted to show examples of gaps in the scientific literature. So what I did first is, this is the number of hits obtained with the phrase health disparities and research combined one at a time with each of the keywords representing at-risk groups. So if you look at the total number of hits I got for the combination of health disparities and research, that was 46,100. So that's the 100%. And then I used the following priority groups, if you will, or at-risk groups. So as you can see, the number of hits I received for disability combined with health disparities and research was 12,400. It is the lowest percentage of any of the other priority populations. The one that comes the closest, down at the bottom, elderly, only had 27.7% of the total number of hits for health disparities and research. But as you can see, most of the other priority populations were almost twice, had twice the number of hits as disability did. So what I'm trying to illustrate here is that these are gaps in the scientific discourse about health disparities and research on disability. Similarly, I did the same thing, the exact same analysis, but this time with health promotion and research. So I combined health promotion and research. So what can you do about health disparities through more intervention-oriented health promotion and research? And I was surprised to see that the total number of hits for health promotion and research was almost a million, 967,000. So that's the 100% level. And then again, if you look at the number of hits for each of these priority populations, disability was radically low. 53,500 hits, which makes up for 5.5% of that total, 967,000. There are other groups, however, that come close to that. I was surprised to see race and ethnicity, number of hits, relatively low, small percentages. And again, we see elderly having a relatively small percentage of the total hits. The big winners, if you will, in terms of research on health promotion would be women. Number of hits made up a little over 30% of the total, and children at 24.7%. Okay, now getting closer to home, examples of gaps in federal disability research on health disparities and health promotion in my institution, NIDR. I derived these data by searching through NERIC, looking in titles and abstracts. So it had to appear either in the title or in the abstract. And so what I want to illustrate here is I used health disparities, health promotion, and then I used physical activity as a form of health promotion, also secondary conditions, because that tends to be where the literature demonstrates disparities, and then wellness. So they're paired together so that the first line looks at just what resulted when I searched on health disparities. So as you can see, and I should have put on here, I'm sorry, that the overall total number of grants averages at any one time in NERIC about 284. So the denominator here would be 284, although these are not mutually exclusive categories. So there was a total of 10 grants we have funded, NIDR has funded, on health disparities. 8 of them are active. But when you pair health disparities with intervention research, there are only 2 total, 2 active. If health promotion had a much larger number, 53 total grants, 20 active. Health promotion combined with intervention drops to 13 total, 9 active. And the pattern goes on, as you can see. Secondary conditions had the largest number of awards at 58 and 23 active. So if these were mutually exclusive and you added up the active intervention grants we are currently funding, it amounts to about 10% of our total portfolio is all. Then I did the same thing. I thought, pick on some other agency. Pick on AHRQ, which was the only one that has this great online database where you can do this searching. So here I used that database, and I searched. They have portfolios. So I used two portfolios. First, their prevention and care management research grants portfolio. I went into that and searched on that. The total number of active grants in that portfolio is 684, so that's the denominator. And then I could pair that with all their different priority populations. So again, individuals with disabilities is one of their priority populations. As you can see, only 54 of the 684 grants under the prevention portfolio are focused on individuals with disabilities, or just about 8%. That is less than half of the next runner-up, which is rural, and most of the others are 2 and 3 times the amount of research on prevention devoted to the other priority populations. Finally, I did the same thing with the comparative effectiveness research grants portfolio for AHRQ, and the pattern is the same. So we have tremendous underinvestment. I'm embarrassed about this slide. We won't focus on it. There is an error in it. Try as I may, I couldn't get access to the actual funded grants database for National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. All I was able to get to were the budgets, and this is an error, and I apologize. But main part of this slide is to show that as what's available on the web right now, they are flat funded from the continuing resolution for 2011 to what is projected for 2012. And if you contrast that with, final slide in this category, this is the new National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities, their budget. Their budget in 2011, $211.5 million. And it is requested and projected to go up by about $3 million. Of that overall allocation, $108.4 million is dedicated to health disparities grants. That is almost equivalent to NIDER's entire budget, and this is focused, as we've established, on race and ethnic minorities almost exclusively. So promising developments. There are promising developments, and I see three here. There are lots we could cite, but of course, number one would be the passage of healthcare reform legislation and all its provisions, which I will use some examples. Although I think you have to look at that in terms of the pros and cons. There's some opportunities there. They really need to be mined. They're not shovel-ready from our perspective. They're not shovel-ready opportunities for elevating disability in the nation's health disparity research, but they are opportunities. I think the launch of Healthy People 2020 is also an opportunity. It has this new conceptual framework focused on the social determinants of health, and it is emphasizing implementation strategies. Why I think that's so significant is when you get to the disability and health topical area page, how many have been there? Great. You know, you can click on the button, you can read all the objectives, but then you can click on the button for implementation strategies. And how many implementation strategies are listed on our website? Does anyone know? 4. There are no clinical preventive strategies listed. There are only 4 community preventive strategies, and 2 apply to cancer and 2 apply to immunizations, which shows the dearth, the absolute dearth of evidence-based research that can be used. So I think the reason I think this is a plus is I think this is really going to call attention to this gap, and we need that. Another promising development, of course, is the National Prevention Council and the publication of their National Prevention Strategy. And I think that has the potential to create the necessary infrastructure that we need. How am I doing on time? I'm getting close on time, aren't I?
You're about up.
Okay. You know these provisions in the ACA as well as I do. But all I just wanted to point out are the pluses and minuses. While disability status under data collection while we're finally there as a designated priority population, and that's very, very important. I see some real downsides, and these are all other promising developments and provisions under the ACA, obviously under prevention and wellness, lots of things there that are promising and potential. The problem is that a lot of, under the National Prevention Strategy, a lot is being informed by these two key documents, the Guide to Clinical Preventive Services and the Guide to Community Preventive Services. That's sort of the guts of what make up the implementation strategies on the Healthy People 2020 website. And the difficulty with this approach is, again, this chicken and this egg, is that these evidence-based practices include few, if any, studies that have been evaluated for people with disabilities. So what are the lingering gaps that we really need to be addressing? The lingering gaps in the ACA is this concentration of collaborating structures for program and policy development and analysis is in HHS. How do, with no designation for disability research agencies, so how do we affect that? Implementation and dissemination provisions in the ACA are heavily oriented to public health sector and the Aging Services Network, with little mention of rehabilitation and independent living service delivery systems. Reliance on existing guides to evidence-based clinical and community preventive services that tend to inadvertently, of course, exclude individuals with disability contributes to this chicken and egg problem. And also, this is combined with the fact that there's a lack of new or identified funding streams for disability research agencies to support health disparities and health promotion research. So we need to be very vigilant. We need to build the evidence base for what works. We need to do that through innovative means. We need to fund more interventions development research. We need to fund more efficacy and replication studies. And we need to have new initiatives focused on T2 translation research to accelerate the adaptation and evaluation of promising practices and interventions from the clinic to the community and from other populations to our target groups. So with that, I'll close. Thank you.